Hello again, and welcome to the second episode of the Bitter Scroll podcast. I'm King Alfred of the Bitter Scroll, also known as Erik Knudson of AncientWorlds.net. If you're new to this podcast, this is my chance to read cool stuff in old Germanic languages, and your chance to listen to it. That nice little intro is courtesy of the lads at Scythian. Scythian, just like the ancient tribe, is a Virginia-based band that plays pretty much up and down the eastern seaboard. They're a terrific live band, and when they play, they get the whole place really jumping. I've seen them many times. Check them out at scythian.com. That's S-C-Y-T-H-I-A-N.com. The featured language for today's program is Old English. I'm going to read you a passage from the poem The Dream of the Rood. Then I'll point out some of the cool features of Old English poetry and how the author shows a special genius for using the Old English poetic style to communicate complex religious themes in a way that would be comfortable to his Anglo-Saxon listeners. It's a great example, I think, of legitimate enculturation of the message of the faith without altering its essence. Before I begin, though, I've got to plug an excellent online forum for the study of ancient and medieval history, AncientWorlds.net. AncientWorlds.net grew from a small group of fans of Roman history to what is now a very large network of neighborhoods, groups, articles, and discussion forums in any number of historical areas. While the Roman section of the site was the first and is still the largest, AncientWorlds.net includes now not just the Roman world, but also well-developed sections for the worlds of Hellas, Egypt, Mesopotamia, Celtia, Germania, the Orient, and the early Americas. My own home site is located, of course, in Germania, where I am known as Erik Knudson. If you enjoy this podcast and my regular blog, you'll probably be interested in some of the many discussion groups in Germania. There's a group on just Germanic languages, ancient and modern. There's one studying Anglo-Saxon England, another studying the Vikings, one on the migration age of the Germanic tribes, and many more besides these. And each world of ancient worlds has several groups appropriate to that world. AncientWorlds.net is a fun, interesting, and very diverse site that makes it really easy to pursue your interest in history, whatever form it might take, whether you're looking for historically based roleplay, or a collaboration on serious research, or anything in between. Okay, so much for the commercial. The Dream of the Rood is an Old English poem that describes a vision of the cross of Christ in which the cross speaks to the narrator about the crucifixion. The word dream in this title, by the way, doesn't mean the narrator was asleep. It's used in the broader Old English sense of vision. And rood, of course, R-O-O-D, just means the cross. So, sit back and relax, and listen first to a translation of the first half of the poem. Afterwards, I'll have a few comments just to help you understand the poem a little bit better, and then I'll read the passage again in the original Old English. After that, I'll go back and draw your attention to a couple of specific lines that I think really show both the author's genius and the great power and flexibility of the Old English poetic style. Lo, I wish to tell the most excellent of visions, of what I dreamt in the middle of the night, while speech-bearers remained at rest. It seemed to me that I saw a wonderful tree lifted into the air, with light encompassed, the brightest of trees. This apparition was cast completely of gold. Precious gems stood fair on the surface of the ground, and there five stood out, up at the crossing of the beams. There angels of the Lord kept watch, creatures beautiful by nature. There surely was no criminal's gallows. Rather, there, looking upon him, were godly spirits, men throughout the earth, and all this fine creation. Wonderful was that victory tree, while I was spotted with sins, maimed by my defilements. I beheld that tree of glory, adorned with vestments, shining so beautifully, decked with gold. Gems had honorably clothed the tree of the Almighty. Yet through that gold I came to discern the former strife of wretched men, and that it first began to bleed on its right side. I was overcome with grief, afraid before that fair vision. I saw that noble symbol change its robes and appearance. Now it was wet with blood, drenched from its blood flow, now it was adorned with jewels. I lay there yet a long while, gazing in repentant sorrow at the tree of the divine healer, until I heard that it called out, began to speak these words, that most precious of wood. It was years ago, I remember it still, that I was hewn down from the edge of the forest, cut off from my trunk stem. Powerful foes seized me there, made for themselves a spectacle of me, commanded me to hold up their criminals. Men there carried me on their shoulders until they planted me on a hill. There were enemies enough to secure me. Then I saw the Lord of mankind hastening with great courage, for he would climb me. I dared not there against the Lord's word either bend or break. Then I saw tremble the very surface of the earth. I could to a man have felled those foes, yet I stood fast. Then he stripped that young warrior who was God Almighty, strong and resolute. Up the high gallows he climbed, bold in the sight of so many, for now he would redeem mankind. I trembled then as the hero embraced me, yet I dared not bow to the ground, dared not fall to the surface of the earth. I was to stand firm. A cross was I raised, the great king I raised up, the Lord of heaven, I dared not bend. With dark nails they ran me through, my wounds visible to all, treacherous open wounds. Yet I dared not harm any of those fiends. They derided the two of us together. I was thoroughly wet with blood, which gushed from the side of the man when he had sent forth his spirit. Often on that hill I have had to endure terrible deeds. I beheld the Lord of hosts stretched with violent force. Darkness then did cover the clouds, the corpse of the Lord, a radiant twilight. A shadow went out and strove under the clouds. All creation wept, mourning the fall of its king, the Christ, on the cross. Yet there eagerly they came from afar unto their prince. I witnessed it all. I was sorely afflicted with grief, but bowed to the hands of these men, humble and of great courage. They took hold there of their Almighty God, removed him from that grievous punishment. The warriors left me, standing, drenched in blood. I was wounded throughout with arrows. There they laid that limb-weary one standing by his head. There they beheld the Lord of heaven, and there he rested a while, tired after that great conflict. They began then to make him a tomb, those men in the sight of the bane of sin. From bright stone they carved it, and laid it upon the Lord of victories. They began then to sing him a dirge, at eventide, as those wretched ones were about to go back, wearily, from their great king. There he rested with his little band. Okay, that's about halfway through, so we'll stop there and leave the rest for next time. A couple of notes about the text so far before we read through the passage in Old English. You'll note right away that the description of the cross as jewel-encrusted isn't quite how the Gospels portray it. Keep in mind that weapons in the Anglo-Saxon world were revered in this way. They were adorned with precious gems to fit the value they had in society. So the author of the poem is using a custom familiar to his listeners to communicate not only the great value the cross had, but that it itself was the weapon that defeated the greatest foes of all, sin and death. I also note that while it simply says that gems lay at the foot of the cross, it specifies five at the cross section. Considering how later in the vision the jewels and the blood seem to fade into one another, perhaps these five jewels are meant to represent the five wounds of Christ, and the value that they also had for the author. Also, you'll notice that the cross speaks, also different from the Gospels. This was a very common literary device in Old English. Compare, for example, the Old English riddles, where you have a short poem written from the perspective of the object you're supposed to guess. It'll say something like, "I ride the paths of the melted ice, and I'm this and I'm that," etc. And it leaves it up to the reader to figure out, "Oh, you're a whale." Now, this poem isn't a riddle, because we know it's the cross. Although, in a sense, it is a riddle, because we know what we are to guess is the value the cross has, perhaps. Either way, it's written in a form and with features that would have been completely familiar to its original readers. In line 39, the first half line, or verse as a half line is called in Old English, is similar to one in Beowulf, where Beowulf is preparing for his battle with Grendel. Line 1441 of Beowulf says, "Yudida hinna Beowulf." Beowulf stripped himself. The line 39 of The Dream of the Rood shares the same basic word order. On Yudida hinna Thayeung Hareth, the young hero then stripped himself. Not a huge similarity, but something that perhaps might have resonated in the minds of the people hearing this poem recited, if they had also heard Beowulf. Okay, now I'm going to read the text in Old English. Keep in mind that every line of Old English poetry is bound together by two or three words that all alliterate with each other. So as I read each line aloud, listen for which sound predominates in that line. This device serves to subtly emphasize and bring together in the listener's mind the alliterating words. It's kind of like, imagine reading a text where every line had two or three words in different colors. One line has three words in green, the next has a couple in blue, and so on. The effect is to draw your attention to those words in such a way that your mind starts to ask what relation the green words all have to each other, and then the same with the blue words, what relationship do the blue words have with each other, and so on for each line, even though it's the text as a whole that tells the actual story. So now to the poem in Old English. Huat, ich sveiv na tjust sed jan wille, huat me jemata to midre nichte, sithan reurberen treste wunedon. Thuchte me, that ich jesawa sylichtre treo on lyft laden, leuchte bewunden, bärma berchtost. That bärken was begoten mid golde, jimmas stodon, feira at foldan chertum, sylche ther fiva waren, Uppe on tham erxle jespanne, beheld on ter engel drüchtnis erle, feire durch furthje schaft. Ne was ther huru frakodes gelge, a kinne ther behelden halje gastas, men overmoldan, und erl theos mare je schaft. Sülich was se sie baum, und ich sündumfach, verwundet mit wummum. Sie sag ich wundres treo, Warum je werderud, windum schienan, je jurid mit golde, jimmas havden beurigene werthliche, welden des treo. Huadra ich durch that gold on juton merte, ermre erjuin, that hit erist ungan, swaton on thos widron helve. Erl ich was mit sorgum je drevid, furcht ich was for thara feiren je suchte. Je sag ich dat fuse bergen wendan wadum und bleum, huile mit was mit watum bestemmed, beswiret mit swartes gange, huile mit sinche je jirwed. Huadre ich der ligende, lange huile, beheld chraucheri, hallendes treo, oth that ich je hürde, that hit chleodrude, on gan tha word sprecken, wudu selester, that was jere iu, ich dat jute je man. That ich was a hauen holtes on ende, a stured of stevna minum. Je namen me ther strange feundas, je worked on him ther to waversune. Heton me hero vergas, baron me ther bernus on axlum, of that he me on bergas setton, je fastnod on me ther feundas je noge. Je sag ich da frean mancunnes, efstan elne mitchle, that he me wolde on je stigan. Thar ich ta ne dorste over drüchtnes ward bugan ot the berstan, tha ich bivian je sach erdan schatas. Ella ich michte feundes je fühlan, quader ich festes dod, on jurede hinne tha jeung haleth, that was god al michti, strang on stiedmod. Je stach he on jalgan hanne, Modi on mani ra jesichte, tha he wolde mankyn lysan. Bivoda ich tha me se beron umklipte, ne dorste ich vadra bukan to erdan, fellan to foldan schautum, ak ich schulde fasta standan. Rod was ich arared, a hof ich rich na kynning, helvna slavord, hildan me ne dorste. Thurch drivan hi me mid derka nailum. On me sindon tha dolgye siene, opene inwit lemmas. Ne dorsti ich hiere nanigum sheddan. Bismeredon hie unk butu at gadre. Er ich was mid blode bestemed, begoten of tha skuman sidan. Sithan he havda his gast unsended. Fera ich on tham berge je biren hebbe, hurra wirde.
Yseach ich werud a god ther lathenian. Thustro have don bewrio mid wolknum, weld in des chrau, shirna shiman, shaudu forth eura, wan under wolknum. Weop al yeshaft, quid don cuningus fuel. Christ was on rode. Whether a ther fusa ferun quoman, totham adalinge, ich that el beheld. Sara ich was mid sorgum ye dreved, chnag ich whadra tham stegium tohanda, elthmod elne michle. Ye naman hier thar almichtina god, a hoven hina of tham hevian wite. For letan me tha hilderinkas standan sterma bedrivene. El ich was mid stralum forwundod, a ledon hier thar lim werine. Ye stood on him at his leech's havdom, beheld on here their helvenis drichten, on he hine their wheeler reste, meither after tham mich lang ye winne. On gun on him tha muldern wirkan, bernas on banan ye suchte, curvon here that of berkdan stane, ye set on here their on sigura weldend. On gun on him tha sorchleoth galan, erma on tha avantide. Tha hie wold on eft sithian, meither fram tha mair an theodne. Reste he thar mata werode.
Did you hear any of the alliterated sounds of the stressed syllables in any of the lines I read? Okay, I'll take that as a yes. Let's go back now to a couple of my favorite lines and take a closer look. First, we'll go to line 13.
Südlich was se sie bam, und ich sündum fach.
Wonderful was that victory tree, while I was spotted with sins. In this line, the three alliterated words are wonderful and victory, or victory tree, in the first verse, half line, and sins in the second.
Südlich was se sie bam, und ich sündum fach.
The author is establishing an opposition, but also in a sense a connection, since the victory that the tree has attained is over sin. And also that since from Christian theology we know that it is because of man's sins that the cross was even necessary. So you've got wonderful and victory tree on one side, and sins, the cause of the tree, and the thing over which the victory has taken place. The next line, in line 14, is
Forwundud mid womum, yesach ich wuldrest treo.
In this line, it's the same type of opposition, but in the reverse order. You've got maimed and defilement in the first verse, forwundud mid womum, juxtaposed with glory in the second,
yesach ich wuldrest treo.
Again, you've got glory on one side, and those things by which the tree has received its glory on the other, the defilements. All right, in line 23, we have
Besuired mit swates gange, quilo mit cinche ye yurwed.
Notice the first word, besuired, has stress on the second syllable, so it's the second syllable, swul, that alliterates. So you have the letter S alliterating in this line.
I'll do it again. Besuired mit swates gange, quilo mit cinche ye yurwed.
So drenched from its blood flow, now it was with jewels adorned. Line 23 here is another example of an ironic or paradoxical type of connection. In one verse we have the stressed words besuited and swates, drenched in blood. On the other verse we have cinche, jewels or treasure. And in fact that's what's going on, is he's saying that these are kind of identified, that the jewels in the Anglo-Saxon world, for the benefit of the Saxon listeners, are meant to, for them to indicate the value of the precious blood. Line 25.
Beheld chrau cheri hallendus treo.
You can really hear the H's in this line. This means gazing in repentant sorrow at the tree of the divine physician. This is one of my favorite lines because each of the three alliterated words has a special relationship to the other two. The key word here, both for meaning as and for alliteration, is the word hallendus. The hallendus treo is the healer's tree, the tree of the healer. The word Halland was a very common Anglo-Saxon title for God, the healer, specifically meant to emphasize his aspect of God as being the source of Hal, health, which is where the word health comes from, but also cognate of the German word Heil, salvation. And in fact, Hal could also mean in Old English salvation. So Halland was the physician, the healer, but the savior as well. So juxtaposed to this word Hallandus is first the word beheld or gazing, almost as if it is by beholding the healer that he proves to be a healer to the speaker. This is clearly a meditative gaze, one that involves acknowledging one's need to be healed. Hence the other alliterated word in this first verse is chreochari. Both elements in this compound, chreo and chari, can mean sorrowful, but chreo can also have the connotation of penitence, which in this context makes complete sense. Let's go to line 40 now. Line 40 reads, Strang on stithmod, yestach heon jalgan helna, which means, from a previous sentence, strong and resolute. Up the high gallows he climbed, is the next sentence. Old English, by the way, very often used the caesura, the pause in the middle of a line, to be the end of a sentence, so that you have a sentence ending midline, and yet the end of the one sentence and the beginning of the other are connected by this alliterative device. This line 40 here is another good example of establishing or strengthening an association between two concepts. The first verse, Strong und Stiedmod, tells us that Christ was strong and resolute. But it is in verse 2 that tells us the object of his resolution. Yestach, he climbed. It's almost as if people didn't want or believe he would do it, and he meant to anyway. This is pretty different from what we're used to thinking about the crucifixion as the Gospels tell us. Although interestingly, the poem does show itself here to be most like the Gospel of John, where Christ is portrayed as always in control, even though no one around him sees it that way. He chooses the cross, freely gives up his spirit, even sits in a position of judgment, the lithostatos, where he does the judging, even though Pilate and the crowd believe he is being judged. This idea is affirmed again in line 44. 44 reads, Rod was ich erared, a hof ich rich ne kuning. A cross was I raised, the powerful king I raised up. Notice here how the second verse alliterates not on the noun kuning, which is a little bit more common to alliterate on nouns, but on the adjective richne, which means powerful, great, even rich. The modern word rich comes from this word, but also the German word Reich, which means kingdom. So it can mean either one. Because obviously, back then, kings were generally the treasure holders and givers. So in this line, with the alliterated words rod and ararid in the first verse, the subtle connection is made between Christ's power or richness and the cross, specifically as it is raised. Those familiar with the Gospels may remember Christ's prophecy of his crucifixion, where he specifically emphasizes the need for himself to be raised up by likening himself to that staff, the staff that Moses raised up, and then everyone who gazed on it was healed when Moses raised the staff. In fact, this also makes line 25 that we just talked about more meaningful, which you'll remember was about gazing at the healer. So you've got Rod in this verse, Rod was ich erared, a cross was I raised. A Hofich Rich Nekuning, the powerful king I raised up, suggesting just subtly that the source of the king's power in this case comes from the cross as it is raised. In fact, as he is raised on it. All right, well, on that note, let's say we call it a day. Next week, which is Holy Week in the Western Church, we'll finish our reading of the Dream of the Rood. I'll leave you now with more excellent music by the Lads of Scythian. This is from their song, Ride On, which I also played at the beginning of the program. It's from their album, Aiden's Orbit. Check them out at Scythian.com. Until next time, so long, and waste too hot.
As you ride into the night, without a trace behind. Run your claw on my gut one last time. I turn to face an empty space where you used to lie, and look for the spark that lights the night through a teardrop in.